From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. The president of Ecuador, Lenin Moreno, has issued a threat against Julian Assange, the WikiLeaks publisher who was granted asylum in Ecuador's London embassy by the country's previous president, Rafael Correa. In a tweet and a television interview, Moreno declared he would, quote, take measures, closed quote, against Assange unless he stops intervening in the politics and affairs of other nations. Moreno tweeted, quote, to Mr. Assange, we have put a condition that he stop intervening in politics and self-determination of the country, otherwise measures will be taken, closed quote. For more on that, we spoke with Joe Loria. He's the editor of the ConsortiumNews.com website. The current edition has at its banner, VIP's Pleas for Humanitarian Asylum for Julian Assange. We spoke with him via Skype from Washington on Tuesday.
Yes, we've just posted this morning a new Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity memo. And these are memos that started way back in 2003, the first one being to George Bush to tell him not to invade Iraq because there are no WMDs.
Uh-huh.
That gave credibility to VIPs since they were right. They're one of the few who said so before.
A couple trillion dollars and thousands, if not millions of lives ago.
Later, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's something to laugh at, really, but it's so bad that... So today's VIPs memo is pleading for humanitarian asylum for Julian Assange. Now, this is clearly the story of the moment because the Ecuadorian government, the new Ecuadorian government of Lenin Moreno, unlike the principled government previously, wants to make what they can out of what they're holding, an incredible chip, a man that the United States is desperate for, who's inside the London embassy of Ecuador, and that, of course, is the publisher and founder of WikiLeaks, Julian Assange. So they, the previous Ecuadorian government gave him asylum because he was revealing facts, truths, based on raw material of cables and other documents that had been given to WikiLeaks by whistleblowers or hackers, people who had access to it that were verified as being absolutely correct. And nobody's ever accused, well, they've accused, but no one's ever proven that WikiLeaks has published anything that's false.
Right.
And that things were retracted, names were redacted, rather, that would not endanger any agents. So this system that WikiLeaks started is endangered because Julian Assange is stuck inside the embassy in Ecuador. I think your listeners know the whole story about he was accused by some women in Sweden. He was never charged of any crime whatsoever. But he was fearful that, and his lawyers are fearful that if he were arrested or if he left the embassy, he would be arrested by British authorities and sent to the United States, where they believe here in Northern Virginia, where I'm speaking from, there is a sealed indictment against him. And it will be very difficult to prosecute Julian Assange on the crimes that they are accusing him of because he's a publisher. He's not the thief. He's not the person who stole the documents.
Right.
He just simply received them. However, we do have to look closely at the law here for a second because I have my first book was with Senator Mike Gravel. Some of your older listeners would know who he was. He was in the Senate, U.S. Senate, from 1969 to 1980.
Yep.
And Mike, who I know very well right now, obviously, because I've worked with him closely on this book when he was running for president on the primary against Obama and Hillary Clinton in 2008. Mike was in the Senate, and Dan Ellsberg, who had the Petting Out papers, was trying to get, before he went to the newspapers, he wanted to go to someone in Congress to have them read the Pentagon Papers into the congressional record, because in the Constitution there's an amendment that says any member of Congress cannot be questioned on anything that he does in the going to or from a legislative act. That means you can stand up in Congress, in the Senate, in the House, even outside. Doesn't have to even be on Capitol Hill, even in a local hall somewhere, if it is a legal meeting of the Congress, and you could say whatever you want. You cannot be arrested for that. You can divulge any classified information you want. So he went to McGovern, and he was running for president. McGovern, he turned him down. A few other senators turned him down. But Mike Gravel, who had been in the Congress only about three years, agreed, and he read the papers, Pentagon papers, into the record. So Mike could not get into any legal trouble for doing that. He was ostracized by his colleagues. Right. It was a big scandal. But when he then decided to publish the Pentagon Papers as a book with Beacon Press in Boston, at that point, the government could have come after him. Because what happened in the Pentagon Papers case clearly is that the Supreme Court decided that the government cannot exercise prior restraint against the publisher, because that's what the Department of Justice had done. Right. John Mitchell, under Nixon, had told the Post, the Washington Post and the New York Times, stop publishing these papers. And they did stop, by the way. If you saw the movie with Hanks and the Post, it's rubbish, because they in the movie, they're heroes, they kept publishing. No. The fact is, they did obey that order, but they went to court because they knew that was legally dubious, and they went to court and they won in the Supreme Court. The government cannot tell a newspaper or Julian Assange to stop publishing anything, but after publication, they can prosecute. And this is what but it's never happened, except the John Peter Zenger case back under Bill Cosby.
Right.
Actually, isn't Bill Cosby. William Cosby, the English governor of New York, prosecuted Zenger, and Zenger won, of course. He prosecuted him for publishing negative things about himself, about the government, the British local government in New York. So he is in some legal jeopardy, but that would also put then the New York Times and the Washington Post and other papers that routinely publish classified information also in legal jeopardy. And the number two lawyer at the New York Times, in a speech on the West Coast a few days ago, and we have that article on our front page too, Don, by Ray McGovern.
Yeah.
He told these judges that the New York Times is in deep doo-doo as well if the government goes after Julian Assange, because then that opens them up to the same type of prosecution. But I think that this rabid Jeff Sessions and Mike Pompeo might just do it if they get their hands on Assange. Why haven't they gotten their hands on their Assange yet? Why is everybody waiting? We hear every day he could be turned over. My belief is the Ecuadorian government and Moreno is saying, look, the United States wants something from us. Well, we're going to get something from the United States. So I think they're holding out. They're holding out and trying to squeeze the U.S. to get the best deal they possibly can for Assange. And it hasn't happened yet. And hopefully they won't come to a deal.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much in there. First of all, just for our listeners, Lenin Moreno, Lenin as in Vladimir Ilyevich Lenin, Moreno, the current president of Ecuador, who was elected as a member of the same coalition that the prior president, Correa, who gave Assange sanctuary, he was elected as a part of that same coalition with the full endorsement of President Correa and of the principals in the left-leaning, if not socialist, government of Ecuador. Right after he got elected, turned around and became essentially a U.S. puppet in about a million different ways. He's been introducing neoliberal ideas back into the economy. There's a whole bunch of things, and now they're starting talking about upfront trading in Julian Assange in the short term, like within days, if not hours. They were talking last week.
Right.
In addition to that, the problem that that we face with this kind of stuff in general, when you're talking about the Pentagon Papers, I don't think people understand what we're talking about. There was a whole mythology about why the United States was in, at that point, 6, 7, 8 years in Vietnam with tens of thousands of dead Americans and maybe a million or so dead Vietnamese, that was countered by a file, big, massive accumulation of paper, basically, that was presented by Daniel Ellsberg, that said, here's the actual history. Here, these are all the memos and all of this stuff, which is the same kind of presentation that you'll find, by the way, at WikiLeaks.org. That is not, oh, here's today's top story, but rather, oh, there's a big box of papers over there, go through it. Or there's a big box of papers over there, go through it, virtual, in electronic form. And it's the actual, fundamental raw materials that you have to look at and try to fit onto reality and say, oh, here's a letter from George Bush to, somebody saying, look, if we go into Iraq, will you make sure that I get that $300,000 check? That kind of stuff. I mean, that's a fiction, but those are the kinds of things that are in there. There's not a story saying Bush gets check from Knucklehead to invade Iraq, but rather the actual memo. And there's tons of documents like this, and the U.S. government in particular does not want you to see that stuff. And all Assange has done is provided a place for people to deposit this. It's like basically use my conference room table and open the door to the conference room so people can come through and peruse this. That's what Assange has done.
Exactly. And the Pentagon Papers revealed it was a study that Dan Ellsberg worked on when he was with the Rand Corporation. That's it right. Revealed that the government from Johnson, in particular, the Lyndon Johnson government, was lying to the American people when they kept saying we could win this war. They knew they were losing the war from way back. And then it eventually caught up with them. And McNamara had to realize that and turned against. And then the press turned against the war, I think, because the public went out in the streets in a mass sustained protest that yeah. turned the tide of the war and turned the tide of the press and gave us an end of the war. And then there was also the whole Church Committee investigations into the intelligence agencies and all the crimes they'd committed that I think came out of this yeah. public pressure. And Cy Hirsch's reporting on domestic illegality by the CIA. So there was a huge turning of events then in the 70s that, again, came from public protest. But the Pentagon Papers was in a book. So a literal book you held in your hand right. and you had to look in an index if you wanted to see something. Today, obviously, there are search engines, powerful ones, that are built into WikiLeaks so that you could put in your own name and then see if you're in any of these documents.
That's right.
And I have found my name in a couple of documents. So just as a byline on some stories, that, especially on the Stratford papers. But you can look up Nixon. You could, well, I don't know if he's in there. It'd be interesting. But certainly any topic you're looking for. And to just use one example of what WikiLeaks revealed was the video of the killing of innocent civilians by American pilots in Iraq, and they're also laughing about it and celebrating it.
Yeah.
This is a war crime that's on video.
On tape, yep.
And you could, yep. anybody could see. There's no question about it. This was the deliberate targeting of civilians. Well, anyway, there was enough evidence there to go to court and try to try someone on a war crime. I'm not saying that it's 100%, you know, they would have been convicted. All kinds right. of things can happen, but there was evidence there. Prima facie evidence of a war crime. Who goes to jail in the end of this story that WikiLeaks revealed? The pilot? The commander who sent them in the air to do that? No. The whistleblower, yep. Chelsea Manning, who gave this to WikiLeaks. Yep. She was the one who went to jail and is now out, fortunately, because Obama did the right thing, commuting that sentence. This is the issue for WikiLeaks. The leaders that we're living under. We've seen neoliberalism from 1980 or even before that, but certainly from Reagan and Thatcher. And the neocons came in pretty strongly under George W. Bush. Their crimes, the neocons, what they do, we see immediately what disasters they have caused in Iraq, in Syria, in Libya. We see, because they're using warfare, we see the destruction of societies. But the neoliberals, it's taken 30 years for this to filter down to the American people, the Europeans, the Brits. The average person is realizing they've been screwed now by these economic policies. Right. And they're fed up. So in the 2016 election in the U.S., the establishment saw insurgencies on left and right. Unfortunately, the right insurgency of Trump won. But nonetheless, the same kind of economic issues are being protested in this election and in these movements, and they are scared crap. I think they're really scared that they're going to lose hold of the population and they can't keep getting away with these policies anymore. And the press has been so subservient to the establishment that they're really no threat anymore. They've neutralized the media by first consolidation of ownership, then by gutting budgets for real investigative journalism like yeah. Robert Parry did. Back in the 70s, in the 80s, with Iran-Contra. I mean, serious reporting. You don't see that anymore. And not in the way it used to be in that brief period in the 70s, that critical adversarial relationship that the press had with government. So they neutralized corporate media. What's left, really, is WikiLeaks. They're the ones who are putting out the truth. And when they put out videos and documents that made the Republican administration of George W. Bush look bad, Well, the Democratic press loved them. They put it on front page. That's they right. really liked it. Now, because he put out the Democratic Party emails that were given to him by someone, they hate him.
That's
so
right.
It's purely partisanship right now that we're seeing. And, you know, this. I have to say this about this persistent argument that why didn't Assange put out GOP emails? Well, he didn't get them.
Right. Yeah, he didn't put it.
He's not going out stealing the stuff.
Right,
he's receiving.
Right. That's exactly right. It's my conference table. Oh, when I woke up this morning, there was a big box from the DNC. Thanks. He's not going out and saying, hey, where's the RNC out the window? All he does is provide, here's the conference room. Here's the table. Put your file there. Hey, everybody, I got some files over here. Come check them out. That's his role. It's
number
like
one,
being a common carrier.
Stefania Morizzi from La Repubblica newspaper in Italy, who was a partner with WikiLeaks on various stories on the Podesta emails, she wrote in a piece that we also published on Conservative News about a week or two ago that they did receive some Trump emails, and they started to go through it, and then they discovered that they had been made public already before. Now, so what was he supposed to, what was WikiLeaks supposed to do? They got this box on the conference room table with the DNC emails.
Right.
Nobody came in with any GOP emails except that one time, and then they realized they had already been published. Right. Is he supposed to sit on the DNC emails and say, no, we're not going to publish till we get
right.
the equal amount for them? Of course not.
No,
that's
not
totally irresponsible.
Right. That's right.
He had to publish that.
You know, and by the way, if that's how the media is supposed to work, then how come we don't see like a tenth of – say, Chuck Schumer's personal business history that we see of Donald Trump every day, or somewhere in the whole Congress out of 500 and what is it, 525, 535 members of Congress, where, I don't know, maybe so 40% of them are Democrats. How come we don't see an aggregation of Democratic members of Congress, personal financial activities, sexual activity, whatever, spread across the media the way we do with Trump 24/7. In other words, there is a bias to the media that breaks down along this artificial, you know, this a political party game that's heavily slanted against Trump and in favor of Democrats in Congress. How the Democrats could turn around and point to Assange and say, you're playing favorites, is beyond me. And again, it wasn't, he's not writing editorials. Here's documents. These are their documents.
Yeah. You raise an interesting point, because during the campaign, Trump was pretty much an open book.
Yep.
We kind of knew he was misogynist, I think.
Yep.
Maybe racist, or at least using racism.
Here's a tape of him in a parking
lot. He's corrupt, that he was a braggart. We didn't really need emails to.
Right.
But Hillary was much sneakier than that, and
yep.
we did need the emails to confirm that our suspicions.
Yeah, she had a managed public image. Trump was, you know, all out there. He was doing
exactly.
that stuff on TV for years. They were pointing
exactly.
a camera at him saying, look at Trump, you know. Well, here, you know, news media, to draw eyes, one of the things they do is provide stuff outside of news for entertainment value. You have, it used to be like astrology, and then it was People Page and sports, of course, you know, big things. And, you know, maybe you don't expect to see that kind of stuff in WikiLeaks. It's all going to be this droll, you know, internal office memos from one person to another. But I was pawing through there last week, and I stumbled on this gem. Madam Secretary, I'm sorry, dear Capricia, not sure if you were able to catch my interview with President Clinton last night on Piers Morgan. Do you think calling Secretary Clinton the greatest Secretary of State of all time shows just a touch of my bias? President Clinton is incredible. I hope our current president, who's as busy as can be, gets to see it. And then this is signed, all my best, Harvey. That's from Harvey Weinstein.
Oh, boy.
To the Clinton campaign. Talking about his PR work on CNN on behalf of Clinton's campaign the night before. This is June 1st of 2012. That's pretty odd. Yep. I guess when she's
yeah, I mean, exactly. That's an example. The nuggets you can get out of it. It's endless. Unfortunately, it's still online in a server secure somewhere. All these documents, so that researchers and historians and journalists can continually dig in there to find out what Harvey Weinstein was doing that night.
That's right.
Or whatever. You know, there's
That's
so
right.
much there. There's so many issues that and the press got so much material from him, and they published that stuff.
That's right.
And why shouldn't they be prosecuted then too?
That's
for
right.
publishing
That's
the same material. That's all Assange did was publish it.
That's right.
He was the he received it. He put it out, and then the press, or he gave it direct to the press before it was put online, so they would have scoops.
Yep, that's absolutely true.
Now, in Snowden's case, for example, he did take the documents, so he could be liable for stealing government property.
But that's not the case
with Assange.
Right. He was the whistleblower, not the publisher of the...
Exactly.
Right. And it's funny, we both, among dozens of other journalists, put in some time with Susie Dawson on the massive... effort she's been doing now for 3-4 months, a whole weekend of it's an online vigil for Julian Assange, she calls it. She has a YouTube page at youtube.com. The channel is Susie, S-U-Z-I, 3D, the number 3 and the letter D. Her banner says, "Proof that America does export democracy," and it's next to a picture of Edward Snowden.
Ah, that's good. I hadn't seen that. Yeah. So, yeah, Susie's done an incredible job. It's a 50-hour marathon that she's running now, the first weekend of every month.
Yep.
And both you and I were privileged to go on there and talk for an hour.
Yep.
And next month there might be more. I had a chat with Susie, and then she's going to introduce a new system into this. So I won't reveal it.
Yep.
Until she does it, but it's going to be interesting how it's going to work next time.
I saw like Jimmy Dore, H.A. Goodman, yeah. Lionel, Margaret Kimberly, just oodles and oodles of journalists.
Dan Ellsberg,
yeah,
John
by
Bulger,
the way. Yep, that's right.
John Kiriakou, Chris Hedges.
Yeah, John was on right after me, actually. Yep, that's right. Yep. So
Chris Hedges was tremendous. Actually, his was last month, not this month.
Yeah, he's good.
I recommend people seeing that one. He was really, really good.
So while we're talking about that stuff, let's talk in general about what is on the front page of consortiumnews.com, because this is the you're the publisher, is that the term? What's your official job description?
Editor-in-chief.
Editor-in-chief. This is actually your work, your presentation of this stuff. And so we've got across the top the VIPs plead for humanitarian asylum for Julian Assange, and that's the group that has Ray McGovern and all those former intelligence officials for sanity. He'll have Journalists Are All Julian Assange, which is a play from Bob Perry, the founder of the former editor of the ConsortiumNews.com, which details exactly who Julian is in the constellation of journalism. Then stuff around the world. What's going on? What happened in Belgrade in Yugoslavia in 1999? What's going on with the Syrian war? The VIPs to Trump, intel on Iran could be catastrophic. Talk to us about some of the stories that are hot at consortiumnews.com.
Yeah, well, there's so many things to write about, and we're fortunate to have good people writing for us. And it's a mix, as you say. I have to say that Consortium News was begun in 1995 by Robert Perry, and he's, of course, the journalist who broke many of the Iran-Contra stories in the 80s, and particularly gave us made Oliver North, the household name, the Marine colonel working in the basement of the White House running this unbelievable conspiracy, proven conspiracy, which is that the U.S., of course, sold arms to Iran, the devil, the Iranian horrible mullahs that they said were the worst people in the world, but they were secretly selling arms to them through Israel, which is also an interesting little part of that, and taking this money and illegally funding the so-called Contras in Nicaragua, which was the counter-revolution terrorists, really, against the Sandinista government after they had kicked out the dictator Somoza and their family and made Nicaragua a much more democratic place. And, of course, that could not be tolerated by the Reagan administration. Yeah. But the Congress cut off the funding to the Contras because of all the crimes they had committed, including killing American clergy members who had gone down there. So Congress, that's their role under the Constitution, of course, is to fund the government and not the administration. So the administration decided, well, we're going to do it anyway. And they did this elaborate scheme. And Bob and his partner at AP, they ran several stories. But the one story they had, which was to nail the whole operation as far as Oliver North's role in this, was suppressed by his editors at AP. They kept saying, go back and get more documents, get more interviews. They had the story airtight. Finally, the editor told him, why can't you just get Oliver North to confess to this? Then we'll run the story, even though they had the guy nailed.
Right.
So the story was inadvertently translated into Spanish and put out on the AP Spanish wire.
Whoa.
And when that happened, that's when they had to put it out in English. It was too late. It's the only way we found out. So then he went to Newsweek, and Newsweek told him he can't run your story about Iran-Contra, or this was not Iran-Contra. This was Contra drug smuggling.
Right.
Because it's not good for the country. Of course, that's what his editor told him at Newsweek. And what he meant, the country, didn't mean all of us. He meant
the government.
The rulers of the country, yes. Yeah. Or top editors like himself at Newsweek. So Bob got fed up and started the Consortium for Independent Journalism, 1995, Consortium News, a place for journalists like that who were running up against walls to publish their work. And he's been doing it. He was doing it until, unfortunately, he became ill last December with a stroke, and he within a month he died. And there was this. I had joined Consortium 6 years before that because I was exactly for the reasons he created it. I was running up against editors at the Wall Street Journal who were blocking my stories on Palestine, on Ukraine, on Syria, and I went and published this stuff with Bob. And it eventually got me fired from the Wall Street Journal because they found out about this. Somebody ratted me out. I mean, it was 4 years I was doing this before somebody ratted me out. It's the best thing ever happened to get out of the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
So we are – Bob then towards the end of his life was really made a mark for being a skeptic on Russiagate, which we could talk 10 hours about. But he did not accept the notion that there was serious evidence out there, that it was all based on anonymous intelligence sources in the corporate media saying these things, that that intelligence assessment of January 17th was not serious because only three agencies and handpicked agents inside those agencies took part, and they really not did not provide any evidence. And there's even a disclaimer in there that this is basically opinion.
Right.
And then he took on the he was writing a lot about Russia, and it became a place to go to get Bob's take and others, because I wrote a bunch of Russiagate stories, as others did, to get the critical, skeptical view, doing what is the bedrock of journalism, which is skepticism. Never closed the door on possible involvement of Russia in any of this.
Right.
But we had to publish, we had to say, well, we haven't seen the evidence yet. We Assange is denying that he got the emails from Russia. He's putting out that it could have been a leak, not a hack from the DNC computers by a whistleblower, the way he gets most of his stuff.
Right.
So Bob died, and I've tried to keep it going. I tried to diversify beyond Russiagate, but I'm finding just by looking at our analytics here that most of the stories, the top 12 stories over the last 3 months have all been about Russia. Yeah. People not that interested in our stories.
Well,
we're going to on Syria, on Belgrade, on Iran, et cetera.
I mean, this is, you know, perhaps a mirror effect of the general media scape, because none of them are covering Syria or any of these other stories. They're covering Russiagate, even though, you know, if you look for evidence, there's
on the other side,
there's no there. So when if people are saying, okay, well, I don't believe what I'm looking at, let me see what other people are writing about it. Of course, that's going to be the hot topic.
Yeah.
You know?
It is, and we're going to do more of it now. But and I had to write pieces when the indictments came down by Mueller recently of the 12 GRU agents, which are only indictments, allegations, not evidence, although that's the way it's spoken about in the corporate media, as if this is a conviction of these guys. We'll never see that evidence, Dom, because those guys will never be arrested. And if they were, they cannot be extradited. There's no extradition treaty. So they'll never have to go to court. They could write whatever they want in that indictment, basically.
Right. I mean,
because they will never have to be challenged.
That's right. And which means that there's no cross-examination, no counter evidence, rebuttal evidence, no new evidence presented by the other side, which is the point of an adversarial justice system. If you're going to find truth, you let each side bring their truth to the court. And if one side's not coming, you can rig the outcome pretty easily.
And even if they did go to court, they have another thing, ace up their sleeves, which is they can invoke state secret privilege.
Right.
Meaning our evidence is, unfortunately, Your Honor, our evidence is classified.
That's
so
right.
We're going to have to go into your chambers, and you have clearance, because we knew this was going to happen, and we'll show you the evidence, and you'll come back to the courtroom, even if there's a jury there, and say, guilty.
Right. That's
I'm sorry, you can't. The public and the jury cannot see the evidence, but they're guilty.
It's an amazing condition.
That's what they would do in that case.
That's right.
That's a democratic system of justice.
That's joke. Right. That's the one we live with. Well, I'm really glad that we're able to grab you today, Joe, and I look forward to speaking with you again here. Keep up the good work.
Don, I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. And that's all the news we have for you right now. for Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.